Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Across the country, children will be back in the classroom in just a matter of days or weeks. And in addition to reading, writing, and arithmetic, parents of young Black boys may also need to be aware of how their children are being treated. Some Black boys are being identified as trouble in class as early as preschool. Well, joining me to talk about this are Dr. Catherine Norris, Chair of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the Howard University School of Education, and Dr. Ivory Tolson, author, educator, and professor of counseling psychology at Howard University. If you have a comment about this, if you have a question about this, if you have a concern, if you have a young Black boy going to school perhaps for the first time, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Tolson, Dr. Norris, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, Dr. Tolson, yeah, can you hear me? Yeah, there you go.
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you.
So the reason this is coming up, there was a study that was conducted at the Yale University Child Center about 6 or 7 years ago, but it's gained new traction on social media and with that concern from parents. And I'm sure you both are familiar with this, but just for the sake of our listeners, let me just kind of backtrack a little bit, give them the Yale study cliff notes. And basically, some 130 preschool teachers were told to watch video clips of children in classrooms and look for signs of challenging behavior. There were all kinds of children in the classroom, Black children, white children, girls, boys, etc. There were no challenging behavior shown in the video, but the study was scanning where teachers spent more time looking. And according to the study, they looked and spent more time watching the Black boys than any other child in this classroom.
Yeah.
Dr. Norris, let me start with you.
Yes.
First of all, 6 or 7 years ago, this study came out. Is this still a relevant issue?
Oh, absolutely. I think that this has been known even long before 2016, but I think the study really shone a light on what was happening, and I think it really made it more clear to us that something needs to be done. So I think absolutely this is happening today, and it's happening all across our classroom, definitely in a preschool, but also K through 12 settings.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Tolson, of course, this references what is considered implicit bias. Can you give me a working definition of that, particularly as it relates to racism, race, prejudice, and looking at young Black boys?
Yeah, I can. But I'm first going to say that this study isn't about implicit bias, even though all the newspapers are saying that. When you explicitly say, because 42% of them said when they were given the opportunity to consciously think about which child required the most attention, 42%, the plurality of them, said Black. So that means they thought about it. That's an explicit bias.
Mm.
Implicit is when it's beyond your conscious awareness. That's why the implicit bias test doesn't give you time to think about it. It flashes. And then you have to have this paired association. So if you pause when you see a black man associated with something good, if you pause and then respond to it, then it's implicit. So we have to think about not just the implicit bias, but the explicit biases. And that's clearly what this Yale study showed.
Hmm. But again, okay, some people could say been there, done that, got the t-shirt. We understand that this was an issue. So did they just shelve this study and nobody's thinking about that? What's going on in the classroom, Dr. Norris?
So I think that a number of things are going on. I think that this has been shelved for far too long. I think that there are individuals that are doing the work, but I think that as we see now, especially today, we have people that are fighting hard for us not to do the work. So, yeah, we've been doing the work, but the work still needs to be done, and we have a long way to go when it comes to the work that's happening in our preschools and in our K-12 settings.
Hmm. We're talking about black boys being identified as trouble in class as early as preschool. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this, give us a call. If you're a parent who is concerned about this, whether your children are just entering school, or perhaps you may see the long-term effects of what this study has suggested, I'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gigi, calling from Bowie. Gigi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
And thank you for discussing this issue, because I know the kids are about ready to re-enter the school system, and I am highly concerned with this sickness that's been going on for many years. It's going to take a village to address this. It's going to take moms, dads to participate, go to the school systems and talk to the teachers. They cannot do this by themselves. And there is a lot of racism that's going on within the school system. But parents are going to have to monitor that. I monitored my children 24/7 in school. I talked to the teachers. If the teachers know that parents are concerned, then they will change their attitude. And I have grandkids, and I will definitely be participating in their school activities. Well, there is a lot of racism that are going on. It's a system that's set up, I call it pipeline to prison. When they know these kids are coming out of these broken homes, then they put them in a box, and they say, that's a problem child. And that's a result or the root of what's going on with these young men now as teenagers. They started out with a broken family, then it got into the school systems, and the teachers were mistreating them because they had a lot of teachers that weren't even qualified to even teach. And someone hired them and they weren't qualified. So therefore, the black young men are just being spit out here in the community. They're not receiving love. So if you're not receiving love, you can't give love. So that's why they're out here shooting and killing each other, because it started from home, school, and then they feel like they're no one, and then they start the criminal activity. So this is something that parents, it's going to take a village. And just to say one more thing, the school system has to hire better quality teachers to make sure they don't have any racial biases before they hire them.
Yeah. Gigi, thank you so much. What do you think about what she said, Dr. Tolson?
Yeah, well, one very important thing that she said was the role of parents, because parents need to have frequent conversations with their child's teachers, the school administrators, because they need to understand that we are not going to just allow them to suspend our children, to place them in special education. We have to be informed on what's going on. And we have to be a quality control check for the school. And it's unfortunate that we have to do that. Another thing she said that was very important was the role of caring and compassion and showing these children that you care about them. You know, one of the things that I said in my book is that, you know, we don't need teachers to be better teachers. We need teachers to be better people. Mm-hmm. And that humanistic spirit, you know, caring for the children that you teach is what's missing. And when we talk about the teacher preparation curriculum, you know, how do teachers demonstrate their competence from college to pre-certification, to their reviews. Nothing involved in that really addresses whether or not they care about the students. It's all about content knowledge. Mm-hmm. And because we have computers that are doing so much of that content for us right now, it gives us the opportunity to reshift our priorities on what makes a good teacher. We have to have teachers that are better people, not teachers that are better teachers.
So let me ask you about this, Dr. Norris. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that teachers who are part of this study and teachers who may be listening to this conversation, by virtue of their title, teachers, educators, these are not stupid people. These are people who are aware either peripherally or intimately about the term achievement gap.
Mm-hmm.
Is the paying more attention to young Black boys early in their educational process, could they use that as a defense, saying, yeah, I'm watching them because I already know that the achievement gap issue between Black children and white children starts very, very early, and that's why I'm paying so much attention? Is that a legitimate defense of that?
Well, I mean, I don't think that that's a legitimate defense of it, no. I think that a lot of times, and because if you look at the study talks about the fact that white teachers did this, but also teachers of color or Black teachers were also more focused on the Black boy. So I think that the conversation needs to be larger. It needs to be more extensive. I think that a lot of times we're so ingrained with things, and like Dr. Tolson said, it's more explicit than implicit. But a lot of times it is implicit. It's a combination of both, especially when it comes to Black teachers. And I think they're looking, we're looking at them for different reasons. Let me first clarify that. So we need to be aware that that's happening. We need to make sure that we're understanding that that's happening, but we need to guide teachers. I'll tell you a little bit about real quickly what I did with preschool teachers. I used to go in Pennsylvania and do this type of equity anti-bias training in preschool classrooms with teachers. And a lot of them, when I would come in, and I'm talking 99 or 95% white preschools, they had their guard up. You know, they were ready. They didn't want to do this work. So a lot of it was allowing them to see how this work is necessary, why this work is necessary, and how this work both impacts Black students in a positive way, but also white students benefited from this work, and all students. So I think that it's getting them to see that, one, that these biases do exist, whether they're implicit or explicit, and two, getting them to see the need to do this work at a very early stage in the game. And Dr. Tolson is absolutely correct that we need to make sure that we're recruiting and hiring teachers that are empathetic and that have a love of children, period.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about Black boys being identified as trouble in class, even as early as preschool. What do you think? What are the long-term implications of this? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's go to Stacy. Stacy.
Hello.
Calling from D.C. Hey, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to chime in on the subject because my child was a victim going through this phase in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
It was his eighth grade year, and it was only one teacher that had a problem with him, which was his math teacher. And they pulled us in the school, me, the principal, and my child, the principal, and the teacher he was having a conflict with. So before we had sat down and had a meeting, I asked him what was going on before they got in here so I have a better understanding as to, you know, what's going on. And he was just like, "Ma, this teacher makes me feel stupid. Like, if we don't know an answer, she turns red." Now, I'm getting the feedback from the teacher that my child is aggressive. He doesn't participate. He's not involved in the class at all. So once I sat down with him and I asked him what was going on, he gave me a better understanding as to why this teacher was, you know, why was he acting this way in class. And he was just like, you know, she made me feel stupid, like, you know, her actions and stuff. And she had said that my son put her hands on him. And I had said, you know, it had came up, you know, while we was in a group meeting, and I asked him, like, did you put your hands on her? He was like, she touched me on my back and I told her not to touch me. And it was just like, we hadn't had any problems from any of the teachers. The principal was like, you know, your child make it his business. If he's walking up the steps, he'll make it his business to turn back around to speak. Like, he's very, you know, very social.
Okay.
He didn't have any problems, but it was only this one teacher that he had these problems with.
Okay. All right. Well, Stacey, thank you so much for sharing with me. Real quick, Dr. Tolson, what do you hear from what Stacey was sharing with us?
Yeah, I just want to commend you for handling it the way you did, because too often children just feel like they're in a vacuum And we teach them to respect adults and to do the right thing in school. But sometimes the school doesn't do right by them. And for you to have that conference, for you to hear both sides, for you to take all of that information into your own inventory and make the best decision for your son, that's what we need to do. And it's unfortunate that we have so many teachers that need that training. And I want to uplift the teachers that are doing the right thing because they're out there. A lot of them seem like they were at the school that your son was at. But it only takes one teacher to really set you behind. So we can't tolerate even a minority of teachers that's willing to just sacrifice the talented black boys that we have in school. So, you know, we just all need to work together. And I want to thank you for uplifting this topic on your show.
Stacey, thank you so much for sharing your experience on the program. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about black boys being identified as trouble in class, even as early as preschool. Why is this happening? What can parents and educators do about it? Lines are open. And we're going to be taking calls all the way up until about 8 o'clock at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you are on the phone, that includes Tisa calling from Maryland, Kimberly calling from D.C. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. School is starting, and yet here's something that some parents of very young black boys may be concerned about. Are their sons being identified as trouble in class as early as preschool? A study from Yale about 6 or 7 years ago says yes. But why is this happening, and what can parents and educators do about it? My guests are Dr. Catherine Norris, Chair of the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the Howard University School of Education, and Dr. Ivory Tolson, educator, author, and professor of counseling psychology here at Howard University. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tisa, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening.
Hi.
First, I really would like to commend the esteemed panel that's on tonight. I'm an educator, and oftentimes we start talking about the teachers. Let me just say, teachers are highly qualified. We have to meet rigorous requirements, especially in the state of Maryland. So you don't have, for the lack of a better word, a nilly-willy sitting in a classroom. Most of us are sitting in the classrooms with master's degrees, and we're not getting paid on that level. Teachers, by and large, are the first ones that get cut when it comes down to budget crises and issues within the state. So that's number one. So we're not getting our due when it comes down to fair and equitable pay because we're the first ones that get cut. Number two, I have not had an opportunity to read the study, but I can tell you as an educator, oftentimes, the students are coming into the building, that's the school, an inanimate object, with the behaviors from the community and home. What parents can do is to educate their children at home of proper and appropriate etiquette in the classroom. You have teachers that are in classrooms that are oversized, do not have co-teachers to help with the oversized, and yet and still you expect teachers to be able to control out of control behaviors. You have students that are in the classrooms as young as an elementary school with smartphones that want to be on TikTok and YouTube but do not want to be engaged in instruction. And when you say you cannot have a phone in school, that's an issue. If you contact the parents, that's an issue. You know, so if we're going to be realistic, yes, there are some implicit and explicit biases. Yes, there is. But there's also behaviors that students are coming into the building that are coming from the community and home. So if you want to do something, let's start giving the parents the tools to be able to parent appropriately to send their students to school.
Let me see what, Tisa, thank you so much. Let me see what Dr. Norris has to say about that, because she said quite a bit, Dr. Norris. Yes. I'll let you start.
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that.
Sure. We'll do the ladies first here.
Yes, absolutely.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. First, let me say I can hear the passion in her voice. I taught in the Philadelphia public school system for over 18 years, and I absolutely can hear and recognize a lot of the concerns that she is saying. I think that the study was talking about even absent of behavior, right? We have a tendency to focus on and look at one demographic more so than the other. So we're focusing on Black boys even without the behaviors. And I think that's where the real big issue lies. I think that, and this is from the previous caller who said that kids know when teachers are targeting them or not believing in them or feeling that they're not capable. So I think that there's a combination of things that are going on. Yes, I agree with the caller that says that we need to work together, parents, teachers, communities, and administrators, to make sure that we identify and get to the root of these problems. And we need to make sure our teachers are properly prepared, master's degrees and all, that they're properly prepared and that the parents are also on the same team. So I think that that's a real big key thing, to make sure that we're all working together to support and to recognize what behaviors their children are coming in with. But the biggest thing is talking about that bias that does exist. And there is a bias absent of behavior problems.
Dr. Tolson?
Yeah, so I want to, say how much I appreciate the caller for everything that she said. And there's a couple of things that I think is important to address. She talked about the qualifications of teachers. That's important, but we also have to acknowledge that teachers are not qualified in racial competence, in understanding biases, and that's the problem. And so every time we have these problems, we want to put together commissions to try to increase the standards for teachers. But what standards are we talking about? We can have teachers as smart as they want to be. You could be as smart as Einstein, but you can still have racial prejudices and biases. And that's what we have to address. I also think that it's important to note that there were some biases that was coming out in the way that she expressed the problem. She talked about problems that are coming from the community, problems with parenting and all these types of things. Now, does it exist? Probably. But it's more likely.
Hold on, Dr. Tolson.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You have more education than I do. Mm-hmm. But I got to call you out. Don't give me the probably.
Okay.
Me. Because Dr. Norris worked in the Philadelphia school system. Tisa says that she's an educator. My parents were educators. No community is pristine.
Exactly.
And we do know that our communities, I'm not talking about the far-flung, upper-crust communities of Western Howard County.
Okay, I'm talking about them, though, because they have problems, too.
They may. Yeah, they most certainly may.
Their children do drugs.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, I understand that. But, their children do drugs. They curse their teachers out because they curse their parents out. We could have a whole different show about that.
Right.
But you can't say probably. Because we know definitely the Tisas of the world know that I report on it every day, and I think that we should address what Tisa is saying. I said it's not always. You said she has some biases that were coming out that may be based on experience.
Yeah, I'm going to finish this point real quick.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And so. Problems that are coming from the communities, we're going to acknowledge that there are problems that come from every community,
yeah.
But we look at problems differently, right? Mm-hmm. So we believe a lot of black people believe that our problems coming from our community, are worse than the problems coming from white communities. Even though we don't have intimate knowledge of those white communities, and even though those the problems hide under the radar of the media. Mm-hmm. So but we still hold that. Now, when we look at the differences in the schools that's in their communities and the mm-hmm. schools that's in our communities and see all of the mm-hmm. structural problems,
yes.
we see our teachers getting paid less. Mm-hmm. Our teachers are missing more days of class. Our teachers have lower qualifications. Our facilities are worse. Our equipment is worse. Mm-hmm. And yet we are blaming the community and yes. parents when we can see the differences in the schools yes. that they are educated in. That's unfair.
I'm yes. not, and I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you about that.
Wow.
But I think that what Tisa's saying, and I'm not trying to put words in her mouth, mm-hmm. but I've been around long enough to hear in Walmart and Target that parents who look like me and the way that that some of them talk to their children makes me clutch my imaginary pearls. And I think that, yes, Dr. Tolson, I think the schools have a responsibility. But mm-hmm. to Tisa's point, parents have a responsibility too, because like the caller said earlier, she said that her son told her that the teacher made him feel stupid. Parents can't make their children feel stupid too.
Okay. Are white parents
I can't speak about
black parents?
I can't speak about white parents.
Okay.
I can speak about black folks. But anyway,
yeah.
Tisa, you throwing a wrench in this conversation.
I'm
black as I want to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Tisa,
sometimes when we talk about black parents and their you know, the way they talk about kids, the way they dress and all that kind of stuff, we make it seem like black parents are an anomaly when it comes to parenting skills that can be improved. And I don't believe that.
Okay.
I think that one of the things that we have to really think about is that it's really not one or the other, right?
Right.
So it's a combination, just like the caller said, it's a combination of all. Myself and my co-editor, we had a book talking about social justice and parent partnerships, because it's the school, it's the community, it's everything. And Dr. Tolson is right. If we're having schools that are structurally problematic and that are missing out on ABC, so your behavior problems are going to be magnified, right? So, and it doesn't matter, and it's not, they're not misbehaving because they're black, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have all of these things that are at play at the same time, and it becomes problematic. And it's not either or, and it's not one right or the wrong. We all have to get on the same page to figure this out. The issue that we're talking about today, though, is how race, on top of all of that, you know, these biases compound an already difficult situation, because we're
Absolutely.
Talking about these biases, whether implicit or explicit. I can take them to Philadelphia in a school where, you know, we have, you know, probably a large majority of black kids, or I can move it to somewhere in Kansas or Montana. Those racial biases are going to be problematic wherever you move them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're independent of any other behavior problems. And so we have more than one issue that we're kind of talking about here.
Tisa, yes, thank you so much. Hang in there.
I
got to go. I appreciate it, because you become a third guest. Thank you, though. I appreciate your phone call. Real quick, before I go back to the phone lines, talk to me, and I think we've kind of spoken about this a little bit, and I don't want to mix the two, but, and I'll start with you, Dr. Norris. What about, and this has been an issue that's been going on for quite some time, about mm-hmm. the lack of black men, even in early childhood education, whether we're talking about preschool or even in child care centers? Does that make a difference? And is there any relationship to the lack of black men in early childhood education and cultural competency for young black boys? Is that too much, Dr. Norris?
Yes, 100%. 100%. We know that black male teachers only make up about 2%
of the male of the teachers in our country, and that is not representative of the student body at all. And that's a really big problem, because we know when we have black teachers and teachers of color that our students tend to be more successful, especially our black students, but also all students and all students of any race tend to do better when they have that representation there. So one of the things that we really are pushing and striving for, especially Howard C&I, we're looking to make sure that we're not only bringing teachers that are represented, that are black teachers, male and female, but we're also making sure that they are critical change agents and that they are culturally responsive and they are ready to go into the classroom. Our teachers are highly sought after and they know this work that we need the teachers to know. They're being trained that way, but absolutely, black males in the classroom make the world of difference, and that's why we need to really focus on some recruitment, retention, and support of our teachers of color.
Dr. Tolson.
Yeah, so black male teachers are important, but not for the reason that a lot of people believe.
Okay.
We don't need black male teachers to teach the kids that white teachers don't want to teach. We need black male teachers to be a part of the interprofessional dialogue. We need them to be doing professional development and to serve as an example, not to these young black boys, but an example to these racially biased teachers, mm-hmm. that these young black boys could be something. And so, and our black male teachers, they get scapegoated a lot. They are only 2% of the teaching profession, but every male has an underrepresentation of teachers. White males, Hispanic males, especially Asian males. Mm-hmm. You hardly see any Asian male teachers, but yet Asian students do fine because they don't have racism against them.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to check racism first. Mm-hmm. And I think that black male teachers can help to combat racism, but they don't need to come to be surrogate fathers to fatherless mm-hmm. black children, because that's just another stereotype trope that we use.
But you did say in your statement just now, you were talking about teaching, you know, young black boys or young black students that they could be something. Isn't that at the heart of the cultural competency piece, or am I missing something?
So you need black male role models in various areas of their life.
Uh-huh.
There's no evidence that a black male teacher is going to have any better impact on the child than a black male doctor, or a black male lawyer, or a black male engineer, or a black male carpenter, plumber, any other areas where this black boy has exposure to that. So our way of problematizing black boys and making it seem like black male teachers are the solution, I think is problematic in and of itself.
So let me ask you this before I go back to the phone lines, because you said something that really struck me, that you don't believe that, you know, black male teachers would be any more impactful than black male doctors, lawyers, butchers, bakers, candlestick makers, what have you. But what if the black boys don't see the black male teachers and they don't see the black doctors and the black lawyers mm-hmm. and the black butchers, bakers, candlestick makers?
Yeah, so this is one thing that a lot of people don't understand or appreciate.
Okay.
Among black males who have at least a bachelor's degree, teaching is the number one profession. Among black males with at least a bachelor's degree, in our top 10, we have about 4 helping professions that white males do not have in their top 10. Social worker is in our top 10, is ranked number 65 among white men. So black men are holding it down. Educated black men are holding it down when it comes to helping professions in a way that no other race group does. But other race groups have a higher percentage of high earning professions in their top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me what's going to make a bigger difference in the black community.
Well, no, that's why I'm asking, because
right.
I don't, because and it could be a fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you're saying if the children don't see black men doing all of these things, that it really doesn't matter.
No. You can go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Let me say this real fast, and then I'll let you finish. Mm-hmm. When we think about this idea of, yes, they need, and I 100% agree with you, that they need to see black males in every aspect and in every profession, But when you're talking about children who are in the class for 6 to 7 hours a day, they're in their schools, uh-huh. and they're having that face-to-face contact. And when we're talking about the fact that a lot of the racial problems that our young black men are facing begin in the classroom, that is why, in my opinion, I think that it is critical to make sure that we recognize how important that is, because they can, and you're right, we don't want them in the schools the way that a lot of them are being used to be disciplinarian, to be the father figure, to be the, you know, all of the things that we don't really need them to just be. But we do need them there as representative and as representation for our black students and as a role model for the teachers, as you said. So I think it's important because of the time face value that our black boys are in the classroom. That becomes, to me, really critical, because they're not going to be in a lawyer's office, you know, 6 to 7 hours out of the day, if that makes sense. Not to devalue the black lawyer, but...
Oh, no, let's not do that.
I 100% agree with what you're saying. And I want to make it clear what I'm saying. I'm saying check racism first.
Okay.
Right? So black males are being scapegoated. Black male teachers are being scapegoated on this.
Yeah.
And we are trying to make it seem like black boys have problems in school because there's not enough black male teachers. And I am saying that is a fallacy.
Okay.
Yes. I'm saying correct. If you remove racism from the school, then we wouldn't have that problem.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let me go to Kimberly, because she has been waiting patiently. Kimberly calling from D.C. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Hi. I'm a mom of a black son, and I live in D.C. and went to a public charter school. And I've been listening to you for a while, but I just want to comment on several things, but I'm going to tell you my story first.
No, you got to be quick, because real quick. Now, give me the...
Okay,
give me
well,
the,
my son
ahead.
Went in as... It started with my son as early as 4 years old. He was labeled the minute he walked into the school.
Mm-hmm.
Once he was labeled, because it was a public charter school, there's no checks and balances, they police themselves, the administration, the teachers who didn't have anything to do with him. Once my black boy had an X on his back, He was free game for anybody to do anything. It got so bad that even the teachers openly, because they were given permission without saying from the administration, because the way they talked to my son was kicked out of classroom. No formal education. He was kicked out of classrooms seven and 8 years old.
Okay.
The teacher pulled his hair. Nothing happened. Then there was a teacher who ended up sexually abusing children. He went so far as to try to see how far he could go with my son. Thank God I taught him good touch, bad touch, and he knew I was a police officer.
Okay.
So when I say that it is, it's bad, people need to really listen to their children, give their children a voice. And the more I went in there and fought to a system, and when you have a system like a charter school that is broken, broken in the terms of they police themselves. If you call to make a complaint, all they do is send the complaint back to the school.
Okay.
And then my child was, the more I went in there and advocated, the more I went in there and what is going on? Why is when my son's home, he's fine. When he gets to the school and at the doors, his whole demeanor changed.
Okay, so Kimberly, like I said, I don't want to get too much down into the weeds of the story. I need you to make your point, because I want our panelists to comment, and we're low on time, so please go right ahead.
When a black boy enters the school, depending on the level of ignorance that's in there, they do get targeted. And when they get targeted, such as my son, it's an effect that takes a long time to heal. My son is started at 4. He's now 14. I'm just coming out of therapy.
Mm.
I had to put my son in private school. My son was suicidal. So, yes, I can go in really deep, and I would love to sit in front of people and tell my story, because it's real. And then being a police officer and they knew it, it was carte blanche. You could do whatever you want to that little boy. He's no good.
So Kimberly, let me ask you. So were these white teachers, black teachers, what?
You know what's sad, Harold? The ignorance, and this is what I want people to understand, that ignorance came from every race, Hispanic, white, and the sad reality, black too.
Okay, so let me stop you there. Dr. Tolson, I'm bringing you back in. How can it be racism when the bad treatment is coming from black teachers? Or is it? Or is it not? Is it ignorance?
Racism
is a form of ignorance, and we can go into that.
It's ignorance.
That's part three. But go ahead.
Yeah. And my heart goes out to that parent. And as a parent myself, you know, I have a 15-year-old and a 9-year-old. And you know, I've had my fair share of struggles too. And just like she's a police officer, I'm a psychology professor, and we still have these issues with racial biases. So, you know, oftentimes it does come from black on black bias. And it comes from a class bias a lot of times. You know, we have middle class black people that have biases against working class and poor black people. The book I wrote is called No BS, No Bad Stats, and the subtitle is Black People Need People Who Believe in Black People Enough Not to Believe Every Bad Thing They Hear About Black People. But the first time I said that quote, it was Black People Need Black People. Because I was talking directly to black people who had bought into all of the biases that we've been fed by white people. A lot of black people know very little about white communities because it's not broadcast. We don't know their issues. We just know when their children come out and start shooting people. But we don't know a lot of the things that they deal with. And so we think that all of these problems that we see is endemic to us. And we internalize that. And so black people, we do need to check ourselves. And, you know, like a lot of the things that you know, I've heard even on this call from, you know, at least one of the callers, there's some shades of biases in that. Mm-hmm. And when we start to understand that, and when we start to really look at systemic racism, then we can get from under the thumb of white supremacy.
Well, I'm gonna say, Dr. Tolson, if your child ever has a problem, I'd like to be on a fly on the wall because I'd like to hear you eat the administrator alive, because I know you would. Woo! Dr. Norris, I'll invite you. Your thoughts about what Kimberly was saying, Dr. Norris?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, and I'm very empathetic with her as well. I was the mother of two, I am the mother of two African-American adult men now, and many, many, many times I had to go up to the school to have conversations as it related to behavior or the teacher's perception of behavior problems in the classroom. So I agree, and I think that it's not just just from one race of teacher or not. I think it's the system itself. I think it's the structure. I think sometimes it's the rules, you know, that are written or the handbooks. We have to look at biases wherever they lie. You know, if the biases lie in a handbook that tells us how we have to wear hair or how we shouldn't or how we're punished for one thing over the other, especially as it pertains to race, we need to meet it there, and we need to handle it there, whether it's curriculum, whether it's whatever it is. And I think we have to be diligent, and one of the things we have to do is be advocates for our sons and daughters, and we have to work together with the teachers and work together with the administrators to get them to understand what that looks like, because a lot of times, especially if it's a black teacher, black administrators or white teachers, they might not recognize what it looks like when we're talking about biases in the classroom.
Okay, Kimberly, thank you so much. Hang in there. Good luck. Continue to support your son. I'm sure you will. I appreciate your phone call. Lois calling from Silver Spring. What's on your mind real quick?
Hi.
I'm
enjoying the conversation. There's a multitude of topics within this conversation. But I think the most important thing, and this is my statement, parents should not send their children to school to get 100% educated. We have 50% of responsibility of educating our children ourselves.
Mm.
My son is 43, an engineer. I supplemented his education. I am an engineer too. So those biases and racism, all that, yes, he dealt with that too. I dealt with that too, but I made sure he had the basic education he needed. I did not depend on those teachers to educate my son. I'm educated. I can educate him myself. So he went to school ready and prepared. I made sure he understood what he needed to do to fulfill his requirements to get A's. And he got lots of A's, don't get me wrong. But he also got targeted because he's a black boy. But I just want parents to understand, you're educated. I don't care what your education level is. Don't send your kids out unprepared. Prepare them. Educate them. You can supplement everything they're learning. Reading, writing, arithmetic, it's all the same. I don't care if you count logs, new math. It doesn't matter. Carmen, it's still mathematics.
Okay.
Teach your children what to do and then support them. If they come home like that, one lady said she came home and the teacher told them they were acting, he thought he was stupid, go in there and ream them.
Yeah.
Because your child's not stupid.
Lois, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Real quick, a final word from you, Dr. Tolson.
Yeah, so, you know, listening to the last statement, I fully agree. However, that's from the perspective of someone who's college educated. Mm-hmm. And we have advantages when it comes to dealing with the school because we are on the same education level as the teachers. We know how to talk in their language. And we know how to supplement our children's education. But unfortunately, only about 30% of Black people in the United States have a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, okay.
And so we gotta fight for the 70%. We gotta fight mm-hmm. for those who where it would be very difficult for them to have the type of argument with teachers about things like test scores metrics and curriculum and pedagogy. We got to fight for them.
Dr. Norris, 30 seconds real quick, final word.
Yes, I think that there's much work to do. I think that we are capable. I think that we have to galvanize and we have to be diligent and be in the rooms when the work is being done. I think that it's important enough that we don't let this issue go by the wayside.
Well, that's why you and Dr. Tolson are here at Howard University, because you're doing the work. Dr. Catherine Norris and Dr. Ivory Tolson, thank you so much.
I appreciate
your time and your intellect. And don't forget to give me that call, Dr. Tolson. I want to be in the room where it happens.
All right. You got to help me fight.
I know. That is the Daily Drum. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, August 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.